LinkedIn presents.
People have always been the key to unlocking business performance. Never has that been more true than today. I'm Lars Schmidt, and this is the Redefining Work Podcast. In each episode, we speak with business leaders who are influencing modern work and people practices. This podcast is your key to understanding the link between business performance and progressive people strategies. And if you're a people leader wanting to have an impact on your business, I encourage you to join our community for progressive people leaders at amplifytalent.com/community. This community is unlike anything you've experienced before. Want more direct insight? Here are some words from community members Chloe Sesta Jacobs, Noah Warder, and Balbina Knight.
The caliber of humans that I have met in this group is like nothing I've experienced before.
It is truly the safest community I've ever been a part of.
One of the things I love so much about the Amplify community is having the opportunity to connect with a global group of peers.
And if you're a business leader on the market for a transformative people leader, be sure to check out our HR executive search services at amplifytalent.com. Now, on to the show.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. Imagine growing a business with high-quality leads, fast closing deals, and wildly happy customers. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the LinkedIn Presents Redefining Work Podcast. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt, and today I'm really excited to be joined by Molly Graham. Molly and I, we go way back. We actually had a chance to catch up a little bit before we started recording, which was fun for both of us. But Molly is really a force. She has been leading teams in HR, in operations, and in people at some companies you may have heard of, like Facebook and Google and Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and more. And now we shared our deep love for community, and she is the founder of Glue Club. And much more. So Molly, you have a very long background, you have a very long intro. I don't want to take that from you. Like, what do you want the audience to know about you?
Well, first of all, Lars, thanks for having me. It's so great to be here with you. I've loved watching you build over the last bunch of years. So fun to be here. All right, who am I? So things you should know about me. I've spent the last probably 16 years as an operator inside of technology companies. I spent a hot second at Google, but I really grew up in tech at Facebook. I spent 5 years there. Relevant to your audience, I spent the first 2 years of that time at Facebook in the people function, working with Lori Goller and building a lot of the big people systems, early people systems at Facebook in 2008 to 2010. And then had a brief detour into building a mobile phone. I've spent the years since Facebook helping build startups and a bunch of other things like philanthropies. My title is most often COO, so kind of the figure it out person. My job these days, or in the last bunch of years since I haven't been full-time operating, has been advising and coaching and helping founders, and then more recently focused on operators themselves and trying to kind of share the knowledge that I've learned and help build community and make building a startup less lonely.
Well, it can be a very lonely venture, so that is definitely needed. And I have a lot of questions around scale and growth for you. But the first thing I want to do, I want to go back to your writing and some of your ethos around, you know, A, kind of giving away your Legos. I want to get into that. But I also want to just start with writing in general. You've got an incredible blog, and if you're not subscribed to it, you should fix that. I love your writing. I love the style of your writing. I love the tone. I love the practical tips. Where did that start for you? Where did that like passion for writing? And then maybe you can kind of segue that into the concept of giving away your Legos, why you think that resonated with startups the way it did.
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, thanks for the compliments. Where did the writing start? I mean, I'd have to credit First Round and the First Round Review. They approached me when they first started their blog. It's a beautiful, brilliant blog that's been going on for 10 years now, 11 years. And Brett Bierson and Camille Ricketts, who started it, approached me really early on. And we just started doing articles together. And every time I had a thought or an idea, that I just thought would help founders, I would ping Camille and say, hey, do you want to do this as an article? And so I think we did 3 or 4 articles together before we even got to the one that took on a life of its own, which is called Give Away Your Legos. And I'll explain the premise of it and then talk about how that influenced the writing. So maybe we can weave together those two things if that sounds good to you. So the Legos article was created because I came up with this metaphor while I was at Facebook to help people on my team and people around me understand what it felt like to go through scale. And I really used it personally at first. I just was, it was, I'll explain the metaphor really fast, which is just that, like, I think of scaling as basically a bunch of kindergartners being plopped down in the middle of a pile of Legos. And like, it's a way that has been helpful to me to think about the emotions around scaling. So it's like, at first it's like fun and exciting and you can build whatever you want. And then it gets like frustrating and scary because people are taking your Legos and you're scared that you don't have the fun Legos and you're worried about like being left behind or whatever. And so there's just a lot of emotions that come with scaling and a whole practice around learning how to get good at giving away your Legos and building something and then moving on, that is, I think it's turned out to be very, very helpful to people inside of scaling companies because that article exploded. I mean, it still has, 90 lives. Like I get emails today from people all over the world saying this article was so helpful to me. It normalized what I was feeling. I always joke that like literally what the Legos article does is just say, don't worry, it's going to be okay to people inside of scaling companies. And I think that seems to be what people take away from it. And I think for me, that experience of putting that article out into the world and having it go viral, I guess, is what we would call it today, is how powerful sharing what you've learned can be and the power of storytelling. And it took me a very long time to do it on my own. I did another multiple set of articles with the first round review after Legos. And then finally, a couple of years ago, I started writing on LinkedIn just when I would find myself repeating something over and over again to the people I was working with or to founders that I was talking to, I would just post it. That took on a life of its own and eventually led to the Substack that I write, where I just write about lessons that I've learned and try to share the sort of knowledge that I've earned through making literally every mistake you can possibly make while trying to build companies.
Well, it's a hell of a way to learn. It's how most of us learn, but most of us don't share. And they don't share as candidly and frankly, I think, as you do, which I think is why your writing resonates with readers. Like, if you, looking back now, 10 years, a lot has changed in startups and scale and just the world of work even in the last 10 years. Would that article be any different? You know, do you think if your first round approached you today to write that piece, would it be the same piece?
It'd be pretty similar. I mean, honestly, so I wrote that article in 2013 and immediately started being asked to give talks inside of all the scaling companies. I think Slack was the first company that messaged me and was like, can you come over and talk to everybody? Because everything's just hard right now. And so I do what I call these group therapy sessions inside of scaling companies. And I literally did one yesterday. I mean, the talk has been relatively similar for 10 years. I add things that I've learned or crystallized or whatever through the writing and through my own operating. But I don't, you know, as much as things have absolutely changed in the tech world, the feeling of scaling and what it takes to thrive, grow inside of scaling companies has not changed. That at the end of the day is about humans and what it takes to rapidly organize humans to try to get things done. And thus far, the robots have not actually been able to make that any easier.
And do we need to timestamp that statement? Like, we might need to.
We can come back to it when you ask me your inevitable questions about AI, but like, robots haven't solved it. And, you know, part of that is really an emotional journey. And that, again, is pretty timeless in terms of just like how complicated and hard it is. And also maybe how the fact that we don't really talk about emotions at work. And I think, again, that's what the Legos article did, is it just said it's OK to feel things. Like, don't worry. It doesn't mean things are wrong. It's actually normal to have these feelings. And how do you like use them and not have them eat you alive and things like that?
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you have such an interesting perspective on scale beyond just the article. I mean, you've led scale, you've experienced scale, you've from the inside, from an advisory standpoint, from a coaching standpoint. And I mean, I think you've kind of hit every element of a vantage point on scale. When you think back to those experiences and you think about scaling effectively, right? Like, I'm sure you've seen ineffective scale and effective scale at the time. We'll focus on the effective scale. Like, what are some of the common things that companies that tend to do this right get right about scaling as effectively as can be?
Yeah, for sure. I would just say first, let's take a step back and think about like what are companies? Companies are collections of people, and they're organized well, hopefully. If they're organized well, it means they can get more done than any single person can. That's literally what a company is. At the end of the day, it's just humans and trying to make them the best versions of themselves. And, you know, in clinical terms, the most productive versions of themselves. So what does that mean in terms of like trying to scale well? Do you organize your humans well? And I just want to say, and I'll probably repeat this six times as we're talking, like, the most important thing and the mistake that a lot of companies have made over the last 10 years is, should you even be scaling in the first place? We've seen it a lot in the last couple of years. The answer was no. It turned out your business actually didn't have product market fit yet. It wasn't ready to scale and you scaled anyway. That's a whole separate problem, but it is, I would argue, probably the most common problem inside of startups, which is that people scale ahead of their business and then end up with some whiplash that usually looks like layoffs. I think, you know, growing slowly, growing deliberately, that was my anthem for all the way till 2022. I don't feel like I have to yell as much as I did in, until 2021, because people get it now, you know, but I would regularly give talks places with people saying, hey, we're going to grow 300% this year. And I will just say, as a rule of thumb, I will tell you, it's absolutely guarantee you that if you grow more than 100% in a year, you can't do it well. You literally can't. It will feel like chaos. You will underutilize people. You'll hire the wrong people. I would say 50% is a great growth rate. And that's actually something that Sheryl really brought to Facebook. And I watched other companies like Twitter grow. Uber did the same thing. Just massive growth upon growth upon growth, and then end up having to kind of reorganize and restructure and take some of that growth down because they grew badly. And I think Facebook, you know, we had our craziness, but we did actually even out at about 50% year over year, and it was manageable. Still crazy, but manageable. So I do think how fast you grow has a big impact on whether or not you can absorb the efficiency of those humans well, and actually onboard and use them well. Because I will just say, like, if I had to say, there's a couple things to scaling well, other than just like how many people you add and things like that. Organizing the people well is one of the big pillars. I would say the other two are great leadership. That both comes down to who your CEO is and how big of a learner they are. That's a big thing for me. I only go work for CEOs and work with CEOs that I believe can grow. Mark Zuckerberg, the thing that no one understands about him unless you've worked with him is that he is literally the fastest learner in the entire world. I've never met anybody that learns as fast as Mark does. And it is what has made him the CEO that he is today. And having worked for him twice in two very separate environments, one at Facebook when I was a baby and he was a baby, and then again at CZI probably about 5 years later, just even that growth for me was just amazing to watch. Yeah. And I think it's underappreciated. Founders think that, oh, of course I can found a company and take it public just FYI, most people can't do that journey. Certainly can't do what Mark has done. But great leadership, great communication, huge pillar to scaling well. Part of organizing people well is helping them know what the hell's going on and how they fit into it. And that involves great communication. And then the last piece is just organizing the humans. And that comes down to clear roles and clear expectations. And a lot of that comes to like good management, but also just doing it deliberately and slowly enough that you actually have clear roles and clear expectations for people.
Yeah. Look, I'm thinking about the concept of just organizing humans and the way that you kind of simplify the importance of that and frame it that way. And I think we're kind of at this weird point. We're not at it. We've been at it, frankly, in the field of human resources, where like that's not a great term, but it's what everybody expects. And like, should it be talent and culture or people and places or anything but human capital? But like, do you have a perspective on that? Like, if you were starting a company or building a people function, I wouldn't even steer you towards the title of that. What would you call it? What should we be called as a function?
Oh man, you know, it's funny. Lori and I really struggled with this at Facebook, and I think it took us a shockingly long time to arrive at calling it people. Maybe this just dates me, but that was 2008. And I don't know, we were like, we're not HR. That doesn't make sense. Anyway, eventually we just landed on people at Facebook. So I would say probably what you call it doesn't matter as much as how you approach the work. If I were to take that job, I would call it people just because that's freaking what it is, you know? Yeah. And sometimes I think we get probably overly hung up on what it's called, versus how you do the job and how you approach what is your sort of like ethos and philosophy. So I don't, it's probably an overly simplistic answer, but
no, it's not. You know, it's funny when I published, Redefining HR in 2021, a lot of people came back who were reading like, oh yeah, like you're saying we should change the name of HR. Like, well, what should we call it? Should be this or that? I was like, actually, that's not what the book is about. And I was like, it's not about the title. It's about the mindset. It's about how you think about this work. It's about how you think about the impact of balancing the needs of both the employees and the business. You know, how you think about evolving how we think about the work that we do and the impact that we have. And that, you know, I think people have camps that they're in, and maybe it's seasonal because I feel like I'm also coming back to this point now where I think that the term HR, like I'm wondering even if like, if we had like an exercise where we just blew everything up and built everything anew from the ground up and there was no legacy stigma, there was no legacy expectation, what might that look like? And I would imagine it would look pretty different than how it looks today in most companies. So it's interesting. I think, you know, as the field of HR continues to evolve, I think these are some of the questions that we need to have, because really there isn't a field of HR that's a monolith. There's lots of different aspects of HR with lots of different capabilities throughout like the spectrum of HR today. So it's just, it's a very interesting time.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I feel like that's been true for a long time. I mean, maybe I'm just, again, dated because like what you are saying felt true in 2008 as well. I always think that it's interesting. Facebook was the first really big company, certainly the first S&P 500 company that's run by a millennial. Now we're old, you know, we're, and Mark's like a real millennial. I'm a geriatric millennial, but I was like, we were the company, I believe, that was like, at the time, everyone was like talking shit about millennials. And am I allowed to swear? Sorry, I should have asked.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, so at the time, everyone was talking shit about millennials, and I was like, Lori, we got to start giving a talk in the world about the idea that like millennial values are good values. And here's why. And like, here's the things they're pushing on that are making everybody miserable. But for Facebook, they're strengths, right? Anyway, main point being, at the time, we were like, a lot of what Lori and I did, because her background is not in HR, her background is in marketing, was deconstruct. What is this? Like, what is the people function? What is this stuff even for? Like, why do we have it? And you know, I think those are really good, important questions to be asking at all times, because if you just go company to company and build the same thing over and over again, you're doing a disservice to that business. Because each business and certainly each generation requires a different set of things. And that fundamental sort of like first principles thinking of like, why do these things exist in the first place? And do we still need them? you know, obviously there's the law and the legal side of all of this, which is evolving as well. But like the generation that is coming up right now, like the TikTok creator generation that basically just wants to work for themselves, like that's going to be a whole other set of things in terms of like how you support and engage them. And I think, you know, again, reinvention will always be a part of the job, but that means really just asking why and starting at the beginning. Why do we need these things? Where do we start?
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise. A promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. A promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff. The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. More to-dos, less time, and so many tools to keep track of. Doing business can be hard, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You just need HubSpot. Their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: higher quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
You know, I'd love to get your perspective on kind of leadership, people leadership specifically, in this current environment that we're in. I mean, we've talked about a lot of things that have changed and a lot of things that remain the same. But, you know, especially coming from your background, having worked both on the ops side and the people side, when you think about the skills, like we're in an environment right now where a lot of seasoned and experienced chief people officers are moving out. You know, they're getting into coaching, they're getting into consulting, they're taking sabbaticals, right? They're burned out. They've been through a lot over the last couple of years. We all have, but like they in particular have. There's a demand that is increasing for, you know, really kind of capable people leadership in businesses, where I think historically, especially in startups, you know, you would usually kind of ride with the team you had until you reached, you know, 250 employees and you're like, shit, everything's broken now. We've outgrown everything. We need to bring a senior person in. So those companies are hiring and investing in people leaders earlier. I'm curious to get your perspective. Like when you think about the skill set beyond just the HR and people stuff, right? Like that's table stakes. But like the skill set that people leaders today, particularly in startups, need to possess. So maybe there's somebody who's an aspiring CPO watching and listening, and they want to know like where to focus their learning goals. What skills do you think they need to be able to not just like make it, but kind of thrive in the world of work today?
It's a great question. We have a bunch of people leaders in the Glue Club, and I talk about this because I think it's really important. If you're going to be an operator, if you're going to be a glue person, whatever your title is, and I'm a big believer that like everyone should have this mindset. You know, at the end of the day, what is the purpose of the people function? It is to serve the business. And if we're talking about tech specifically, and software businesses, there are literally two cost lines inside of software businesses. They are people and servers, and that drives the entire economics of the business. Obviously, if you're in businesses that are not software, you might have retail locations and other costs that thin out your margins. But when I think about what is the purpose of the people function, it is a significant big business function. And I think like one thing that I both think is changing and needs to change is we need more people leaders that have a business mindset, that understand that serving people does not mean making them happy. That's great and important because that's part of making them efficient and part of making them like a productive member of this business. But a huge part of the people function is making sure that the people work for the business, right? That the economics work. So I would say my number one thing for any people leader is having a financial understanding, being able to look at a business and think, how does this business thrive? What are the unit economics of this business and how do people fit into it? How do I know if we're hiring too many people or not enough? That requires almost a CFO-like background. So I'm not saying go get a finance background or whatever, become a CFO, but I am saying like a great people partner to the sort of like CEO and the head of finance needs to understand the business they are in. And I don't think that's been a huge focus for the people function for a long time, particularly not in early stages. It's been more like, how do we hire people and how do we grow them? And like, that's both important, but it really doesn't matter if the business isn't viable. And so thinking of the people function as having a huge role in asking the questions, like, is this business viable? Like, just to give a very tactical example, one of my major pet peeves in life is the headcount process, at startups in particular, because a lot of times what CEOs do, and they do it either with or without a head of finance and a head of people, is go and say, how many people do you want to hire this year? And then numbers come back. And a lot of times CEOs are just like, okay, I guess that's how many people we're hiring. You need a lot of rigor to hire well and to scale well. And a lot of that involves saying no, being like, okay, great, these numbers are cute. You want to hire, you know, 1,000 people next year. What if I only give you half of what you asked for? What if I give you nothing? What can you not do? Good leaders will have an answer to that. They'll say, great, if you, here's how these tie to our goals. If you give me half the people, here are the things that I can't do. Then you have a great discussion about whether or not that's important. People leaders should be able to do this too. People come to you with headcount requests. You should be able to say no, or I don't understand, or please explain to me why this is essential. How does this tie to the business? Hey, we made up these rules for how support scales with our customer base. This is breaking that rule. Let's talk about why. Those are discussions that like a people leader should be able to have, but they all require a business mindset.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I think, and again, I'm probably biased here, but I think that the chief people officer today is probably one of the most difficult jobs in the C-suite, maybe next to the CEO, because as you mentioned, like you have to have that level of proficiency in the other, in your peers' worlds and functions like no one else needs to have. It's like, you know, the opposite. Everybody has an opinion on HR, right? Everybody thinks they know HR, but there isn't like that depth of domain expertise. Whereas a CPO has to have a depth of domain expertise, obviously in all things people, but also the financial and business acumen, also an understanding of the go-to-market strategy, also an understanding of like strategic threats to the business and the financials. You know, they have to be effective as a CPO, you have to know at least on some level, all of those things. And it just makes it, it's such a unique skill set for people to have all of that. You touched on one thing that I want to come back to, which is like, happiness is a metric, because I've always been so allergic to that. I think when I saw my first chief happiness officer title, I died a little on the inside. But I just think, you know, that's just, it's such an abstract concept that is so individualistic that occasionally you still hear people in the function kind of talking about like, well, you know, my one of my goals are employee happiness. I'm like, you're going to fail. Like, there's no way that you're going to be able to do that effectively.
So there was something you said, which is that you have to know how to do all of these things. You have to know how to be good at finance, how to understand the go-to-market, like all of that. I would just push back on that and on two fronts. Number one, I think that's true of every executive role, particularly if you're in what I may call a support function. So like, I think the CFO role is equally friggin' hard right now for a bunch of reasons. And I think there's two things that are really important to internalize as a leader. The first is your job is not to know, it is to learn. Yeah. You know, I don't think the way the world is, the world that I live in anyway, which is heavily influenced on the sort of like front edge of tech, the learners are always going to win out over the knowers. So walking in as if you have to know is almost never the right answer, particularly if you're, I don't know, running a business that's affected by technology, which honestly, at this point, they all are.
I appreciate you calling that out because you're right. No, it's not the right word. I shouldn't have used the word no, because nobody is going to know all of those things. But you have to have a level of understanding. And like you said, the ability to learn and a curiosity, a curious mind around those things. And that, to me, is key. And it's not unique to the CPO, but I just think it's like the expectations of how the CPO will help navigate their businesses through so many things that weren't really things that we had to navigate as businesses not that long ago. I think just the complexity of the environment we're operating in just ratchets up that pressure. But
yeah.
I want to segue from there to a topic that I know we're both passionate about, which is community. And you know, we're both community builders. We're both people who've been involved in communities throughout our career. And you know, I think that we're in this really unique kind of golden age of community, because the technology is allowing us to connect in ways that we hadn't before. The awareness of the not just benefits of community, but in many cases, the necessities of community, I think, is there like it hasn't been before. So walk me through Glue Club. How did it come to be? who, you know, what kind of leaders participate in this? Help us understand what you're building.
Yeah, for sure. So I started building the Glue Club about a year and a half ago. It was a happy accident. Because I just got a lot of notes from people after I started writing, asking for time together, time to learn, time to talk through problems, and it became unscalable for me. So I was part of a group of COOs for 5 years when I was equipped through the end of probably my time at the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and we met monthly, and it was like a group therapy. You know, it was like a fight club of just all of us bringing problems that we had or challenges we were facing and working through them together. And it was so important to me. It was essential to my learning. I learned more from those folks than anybody else probably in my career, and just also like feeling not crazy, less lonely, which, you know, led me to with some wonderful friends, basically want to replicate that experience for other people, for other startup leaders. And so we started this thing called the Glue Club. And if you are a glue person, you probably know what it means and why it's called that. But I'll just explain for those that don't know it. We think of glue people as a mindset. And they're just people that kind of no matter what role they're in, no matter what title you give them, they're always going to be the people that hold up the walls and the ceiling, that create the order out of chaos, that make sure things move forward no matter what, that are able to both see the big picture and sort of the next step. Those are the glue people. They're the people that fill in the gaps and make shit happen. And their title can be COO, it can be head of operations, it can be CRO, it can be head of engineering. I've seen every version. And inside of the Glue Club, which is this community we've created for those startup leaders, we literally have some of everything. We got engineers, we got product people, we got revenue leaders, we got HR and recruiting leaders. But it's really for me about finding startup leaders who have that mindset, who think, I want to know what it takes to build a company well, and creating a home for them where, you know, you can actually go to learn from amazing peers, from experts, to actually figure out what does it mean to build a company well? How do you do this? Because honestly, there's actually a lot of resources for founders. Like, a lot of venture capitalists have spent a lot of energy building communities and coaching and teaching for CEOs and founders. And there's not a lot for the people that work for them. There's starting to be more, like your community. But I think there's a real need, and we've seen it with the demand for Glue Club, to create a space where people can come together to find sanity and opportunity and growth amidst the absolute chaos of building a company. So that is what Glue Club is.
Yeah. So how can people find it? Like, what's the best place online if people are curious to learn more? And is there a particular, you mentioned different disciplines are involved. Is there a particular seniority level that is usually like the target profile?
Yeah, totally. So we're just at glueclub.com.
You kept it easy for us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tried. And we typically we focus on folks that are already leaders, meaning they are usually mid-career, so like 10-ish years of experience. We do have some folks that are slightly more earlier in their career than that. But the average person is sort of like 10 plus years of experience and seen as a leader inside their company, probably an up-and-coming leader. Like, we're a great place. We have CEOs send us their sort of like deputies all the time, where that they want to just like have community and support and growth. It's a great place to go if you're the only inside your company, that is, because we can help you become a better leader, which sometimes you can't find if you're inside of a startup. You don't have someone to learn from. So you're looking for folks around you that can help you. And we're sort of like that automatic peer community. But 10 plus years of experience and usually leading inside their company already.
Glueclub.com, check it out. Knowing Molly, having worked with her in the past, like, this is something that you're not going to want to miss if you fit that profile. Last question for you, Molly. Your blog, we mentioned your Substack blog. We have not referenced the URL. So where can people connect with you on your blog to follow your writing?
Well, it's pretty easy. It's just mollyg.substack.com. But it's called Lessons from, I think it's called Lessons from Molly, whatever.
All right. Well, Molly, it was awesome catching up. Thanks so much for the work that you're doing. Congrats on the Glue Club and the community build. And keep getting things better. Keep pushing us forward.
Thanks, Lars. So good to see you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of LinkedIn Presents Redefining Work. For more information on the podcast, past episodes, future guests, and more, be sure to check out our website at amplifytalent.com/redefining-work. And if you want to connect with me directly, you can find me on my website at larsschmidt.com, or feel free to post on social using the hashtag redefiningwork, and I will find you. And if you dig this podcast, I'd love for you to share it with your peers and your friends and help them discover it. And if you really dig this podcast, please leave a review on whatever podcast delivery your ears prefer. I'll see you next week.